The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Your Mom is a Podcast. In this
your
very
mom.
Special podcast, Your Mom, you know what? Your Mom's a Podcast.
Yeah, Your Mom's a Podcast.
Here we interview incredible people and their moms to be like, excuse me, how did you do it?
I'm Sundeep Parikh. You're
Milana Weintraub.
And we're both two LA-based comedians and actors, and we're also new parents, and we need help.
So we're going to talk to people who are incredible and inspiring and change the world, crack us up, all of the above.
And learn to be better parents. And also learn to have some compassion for our parents.
Yeah, who maybe did some things a little wonky or a little perfect, because look at us, we turned out to be perfect people.
So welcome to Your Mom is a Podcast. Lacey Mosley is an American actress, comedian, and podcaster. She performs improv comedy at UCB Los Angeles and co-starred in the pop comedy series Florida Girls. Mosley is best known for her award-winning podcast, Scam Goddess, which I was just listening to. It's so good, Lacey.
So funny.
It focuses on historical and contemporary scams and cons. In September, she's got a book coming out inspired by the podcast. Okay, multi-hyphenate. No big thing. It's titled Scam Goddess, Lessons from Life of Cons, Grifts, and Schemes. That's not it, you guys. Recently, Lacey was featured in HBO's A Black Lady sketch show and the iCarly revival series. And I got to tell you, I'm listening to Lacey's, I think I have a cold. I'm fighting a cold right now. And I think Lacey's podcast is like starting to cure my cold. I'm just saying, Lacey's podcast might be the cure for the common cold. I'm just throwing that
it's
out there
so
as an
sick,
idea.
It's the cure. That's what it is.
Yes. Lacey, welcome to the podcast. Welcome to Your Mom's Podcast.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. And yes, listen to my podcast.
Get it.
I'm working with the CDC. We are going to cure
anything that ails you.
Wow.
Anything that ails you, okay?
And wow, that's totally a cool not a scam.
Okay. Yeah, take your two doses of downloads a day.
That's right.
You will be cured.
Them doctors
the
away.
Audio cure. Lacey, it's so cool to have you on, not only because I got to interview your mom, but also we met like 6 years ago doing something that was an actual scam.
Yes.
Wait, you guys scammed together?
Scam.
We were scammed.
We were so, it was, it's the only time, I mean, it's like a trauma that we bonded over, I think. But yes, we were actually scammed. We were told, and jump in any time, but we were told that we were going to do a movie with our friends, Lauren Lapkus and Tig Notaro, and it was produced by the Duplass brothers.
Yeah.
And the
names.
Script was like fine. It was like, it had room for improvement, but we're like, okay, but there's a great cast.
We're all comedians. We can all elevate it. And this came through our agencies. This came through our reputable talent agencies.
Right.
That who heard about it from a reputable casting director who also signed on because it was a Duplass Brothers movie.
Yeah, so where does this go?
Milana's in my book. I'll say that.
Edge of my seat.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know Marina told you. I wanted her to send you what we wrote. It's absolutely beautiful. But yes, we were told that we were going to be in a movie, honey. They flew us out. They had us on an island, honey. Like, we were literally stranded.
We were on Orcas Island. It's a gorgeous island.
Beautiful.
Where we did not have our own cars. You couldn't walk anywhere by yourself. Food was limited. And we had no way of getting off. And we found out that this movie we were doing was a total hack. Not only did the director take She was the writer director. I'm using air quotes. Not only did she
not the Duplass brothers.
She photoshopped. So basically, the Duplass brothers had this like a hometown hero contest where you could send in a script, and then they would be like, "Oh, if you win, like we'll support you or whatever, whatever,
and we'll give you like $1,000 or maybe $5,000."
Sure. Like a little grant.
Not like we'll produce it. Not like we're putting our names on it. She didn't even win. But she had cropped together this video on Facebook in such a manner that it looked like she had won and that they were producing the movie. It was
I kind of applaud her bravery in this. Like her her willingness to I will just cheat my way to make this and to have fooled so many people.
And like if she had talent or skill, she would have gotten away with it.
Yeah.
The thing that was the big red flag is that we're like, how is she in the position of power? She's incredibly underqualified. The producer should not be producing. And we haven't been fed in 8 hours.
I was like, what was your hint at that? Like, it was just like not being taken care of at all.
The scam was great because a good scammer knows how to do spectacle. It's like you're distracted. There's things. Yeah. And I was the first person to get there. So I didn't really I get picked up in this car. It was almost like a Get Out moment when I started putting the pieces together in my book, because her family owned the black car company that picked me up from airport. I didn't even realize until I saw them loading my bags that the name on the black car was the name. I'm not going to say the name, but it wasn't something I pieced together at the time.
Her name's Lincoln Town Car?
Right.
Sorry.
Her name is a Chevrolet.
Chevrolet, I believe.
I get to this beautiful mansion they have on the water. I sit on my first Japanese toilet. It's warming up. It's giving me music and vibrations. It's like, hello, Lacey. Put your booty on this. I was like, oh, my booty hole never had this kind of experience.
Spa treatment for the bum hole. Yeah.
I'm not really noticing the cracks yet. And it really wasn't until Milana came and I saw her, because she is a fantastic director, as everyone knows. And actress and performer, and also she's gorgeous. But she came and she's a boss. Mm-hmm. So when she came in and we started shooting stuff, was like, that mic pack shouldn't be visible. That should be over there. We don't need to use that baby until we need the baby in the frame. Otherwise, that's just gonna be messing up sound. Like she started doing stuff that I was like, oh yeah, the director should have been doing that stuff.
Man, we should be surrounded by babies.
And
right
at one point
now,
she got mad at me. She was like, can you just act? And I was like, I actually am unable to act when there is a baby crying in the scene.
Right. So, a baby that doesn't need to be visible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we should get into your amazing mom. We talked to Lori Bishop.
Yes.
After speaking to her, I was like, you have to write a book. There is so much wisdom in this woman, which makes sense why she raised such an incredible daughter who can do anything. And so you're so incredibly outspoken and funny and kind and
knows authentic. Her way around an island, like can hike herself out of there.
If I had to be trapped on an island with anybody, I would pick you.
And we did. We picked each other.
So we asked your mom to just tell us about herself. So how would you describe your mom?
I would describe my mom as a go-getter. She's someone who will make a way out of no way. She is someone who is wise and smart, and she's very grounded in who she is as a person. My whole life, I've been kind of a punk, and she was always like, you gotta discover your inner bitch. Like, you gotta stand up for yourself. And also, she is a giver. Like, my mom is the type of person who is going to show, I can't tell you how many funerals my mother has paid for. I can't tell you how many visits. Mm. My mother taught me how to help people when they were grieving. She would say that, when you lose somebody, in the beginning, there's so much to be done. You know, you have to arrange services, you have to get their life in order, whatever bills need to be paid, whoever needs to be notified, all of that keeps your brain busy. And so she taught me that after like a week or 2 weeks after the services have passed or whatever, reach out to them, because that's when things get quiet and that's when everyone has moved on and thought that the big event is over. And that's really when things hit you. Like, my mom taught me how to be empathetic in a way that is so like discerning and special, and she's also just extremely smart. There's nothing she can't do. She's had 50-11 jobs. She had more jobs than a Jamaican, honey. She used to sing for Kirk Franklin and the family. You know, she'd be on the radio. I mean, she was doing nails. She has a hair license, a kitchen beautician, even though she's been working as an executive in HR for forever. She's a big family person. She can cook like nobody's business.
All right, let's hear what your mom, how your mom described herself.
Okay.
So I'm Lacey's mom, and I have been for almost 30 some odd years. I live in Dallas. I'm married. I've been married over 20 years to my current husband, and we also have two daughters. We have Courtney, who's in LA, and we have Sydney, who's our youngest. We have his, mine, and ours, and Sydney's our youngest, and she's at the University of North Texas. About to graduate and then go on to the University of Texas and pursue her PsyD. So no boys, only girls. I work in human resources. I've been in human resources about 25 years, got my start in the world of work in social work. So a bit of a little do-gooder that took that same chart over to the corporate world and have been doing HR for small to mid-sized companies in the Dallas area, some being global, for the last couple of decades.
She's all business.
I love that she was like, here's my resume. You're like, here's her soul. And she's like, here's my resume. Yeah.
It's hard to like gush about yourself, right? So it's
that's why we have kids.
She had to lay down the facts. All right. So, you know, that this first one, we don't usually do kind of gamify like we do the rest of them, but we're going to get right into it. So one of the first things we asked her is, what's the thing you are most proud of when it comes to Lacey? What do you think she said?
God, I should have brought tissues over here because I feel like y'all are going to make me cry. I don't cry on podcast.
Just wipe your tears on the microphone. It's fine.
Maybe that I care about people, that I deeply care about people, or maybe that I'm a hard worker. Should probably say that I work really hard.
Okay, let's hear it.
What I admire most about her is as pretty and as funny as she is, super smart and she's hardworking, and she's carved a career out of the wilderness of Hollywood on her own. And much of her success has been projects that she's developed. And it's a singer who can also play an instrument and write music. When you can create your own work, when you can create your own material, one, it has that unique imprint of your truth and your authenticity, which always cuts through. She has always been one who knew what her gifts were and has been a good steward of her craft. And I am now just so impressed to be able to say I'm her fan. Watching her do the live shows and seeing how the audiences responded to her was just incredible. I forget that that's my kid up there. And I've been just a big fan of her work and have had some of the best laughs watching her do what she does. So just really proud of her career so far.
Wow.
She did say hard worker.
She does not care that you care about people, and you get the point because
she wants me to stop caring so much. She's like, you're so nice. Perfect.
So we do offer gold stars when your answers do line up, and I'm definitely giving you a gold star for that one.
Yay.
I love hearing that she's a fan of you. Like, that is, I cannot think of a better compliment to hear from like my parents, because they've never said that. So like that is so awesome, right? Like, to be like, I forget that it's my kid up there and I'm just like so wildly entertained by their talent. I don't know. How does that make you feel?
It makes me incredibly, I mean, I was my mom's oops baby. She had me at 21.
I was an oops baby. Yeah. Oh, I was the other. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. She had me at 21. And I don't know. I told my mom when I was 5 that I wanted to be an actor, and she put me in classes and she got me little headshots. And then I remember her sitting me down and saying that I want you to have a childhood. I want you to have a life. I deeply respected this because I don't know if I'll ever have children, but this made me feel like maybe I could. She was like, you know, I can't give up my life for yours. I can't be sleeping in cars and running around to auditions. And also, I don't want you to be exposed to an adult lifestyle as a child. I want you to be a kid. But as long as your grades are good, I'll let you take whatever acting classes you want and pursue it. And I always did. And so when she says I'm a steward of my craft, like, I know that she means that, like, I took that seriously. I was like, okay, well, if I can't go to Hollywood right now and, you know, probably end up in a documentary, you know, I can at least work on it every single day. But it makes me extremely proud that she's proud of me, because I always wanted to, I don't know, I always had this weird thing where I wanted to feel like I was worth it. Like, my mom was 21, and when I reached that age, I thought about having a child, and I was like, oh my God, the baby would die. Like,
I can't. It's crazy to think about.
One of the parenting tips that I am picking up from this is that your mom said, which could appear to be like kind of brutal, but is actually an incredible thing. She said, I can't sacrifice my life for yours. Like, I can't totally, I'm not going to be sleeping in cars. I'm not, because I think so much of parenting can be like martyrdom. It's like, I'm going to do everything for you. I'm going to sacrifice for you. And actually, like, what does that do to the parent in terms of how good of a parent they can be, or how good of a partner they could be, or how sane they are? And
she put the mask on. She put the mask on first.
Of course, she put the mask on first. What an incredible thing to do, but also what an incredible lesson to teach you to say, like, it is important for you to prioritize. This is the model of how you should be prioritizing yourself.
Yes. It's like, she would be like, you were born into my life, not vice versa. And I know that, like, sometimes people can hear that, and it, like you said, Milana, it can sound severe, but to me, it sounded like I have autonomy over my own life, and I don't need, and I respected her so deeply for that, especially as I grew older, because I was like, my mom has a full life and she's constantly surprising me. She's constantly learning new things, doing new things, having new adventures. And that is what I admire. Like, it's like, everyone's afraid to grow old, but nobody wants to die. So, like, the blessing is aging, right? And so to age and not get stuck and to constantly be learning. And, like, when I get on the phone with her, she's got some new story or some new experience. Like, it just makes me so proud that she's my mother. I got very lucky. And people don't talk about the privilege of parents, you know? That we talk about money, or we talk about nepo babies and stuff, but people don't talk about the privilege of having a good parent who cares about you and instills things in you that builds you and gives you the tools to survive.
So we asked your mom, what is the earliest moment you remember being proud of Lacey? Like, what is an event or a thing that you did when you were young where she was like, oh.
There was this play that I did. It was a competition play in high school where we did Blythe Spirit, and I played Madame Arcadi, and I ended up winning awards for it in the competition, even though our show didn't move on, which was devastating. Normally in competition plays, like, when someone wins Best Actress, your show moves on to state. So we were all so excited that I won Best Actress, because, like, we're like, oh, we're gonna move on to state. And then we went to adjudication and got ripped apart, and they were like, I can never forget this. The adjudicator, he was like, it was like you guys had a quarterback with a rocket for an arm and no one could catch. And I was like, it was the weirdest, saddest bus ride home. But I remember my mom coming to that play and laughing and having a great time. And she had brought my auntie Alexis. So I'm going to say that, but I don't know. So we'll see.
Wow. So okay, how old were you? How old were you when?
At that time, I was probably 13.
Okay, let's hear what your mom said. What was the earliest moment that she remembers being proud of you?
She was in a high school play, and my best friend Alexis and I went to see her perform. Alexis has been there right there with me watching her performances since she was doing the Christmas play at church. She was playing a character actor in a high school play, and the actor called for a Jamaican accent. And it was a role that I could clearly see had expanded with her ad-libbing. And she was completely captivating and hilarious. And it was the first time I found myself forgetting that she was my child. Because when you watch a child, you're a bit nervous and you're wanting to make sure they just hit the lines and do everything right. I simply became a fan that day. She was hilarious. She stole the show. And I saw that a star was born that day.
Oh my God. Wow.
So points. So I guess points. You get a gold star for that.
Definitely get a gold star for that. And then we get gold stars because she cried.
We get extra gold stars if I'm crying.
I did not talk to my mom about this interview. I did not talk to her about like.
No, we're not claiming that you're.
We're being scammed. I can tell.
I knew it.
I can tell.
No, I did not know. Oh my God.
That's amazing.
Wow. Okay.
All right. So you were 2 for 2 so far. Pretty incredible. All right. We did ask your mom about her parenting philosophy around separating.
How old were you when your parents separated?
So my biological parents were never together.
Never together.
Mm-hmm. No. I was an oops baby in college.
Fun.
My mom was running track. My dad was a football player. My mom said she had one too many hurricanes, and then I came.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Did she ever talk to you about, like, you know, breakups or come back togethers or like?
So there was another separation. My mom was married briefly to another person. I'll just call him Mr. Tim. I remember her saying with my biological father that one of my great aunts had told her, like, he's gonna come back. Like, he's gonna try to come back into your life, but like, you know, you have to be strong enough to move on and know that, like, this isn't for you. And then one thing my mom always told me about dating, which I really didn't realize until this age, and I don't date a lot. I've been single for over 10 years. Don't tell people what you want, because they'll be that just long enough to get what they want from you. Mm. So... Whew. Listen and assess. And it's like anytime you're dating someone or even just like starting a new friendship, it's you assessing what they can offer to you and you also offering what you have to offer, but like not overextending yourself before you know what their intentions are. So that's I don't know if I'm in the ballpark, but let's see what she said.
I knew that my job was to ensure that she ended up where she needed to go, because I knew from age 2, when she leapt out of my arms and ran up into the pulpit with the pastor for the first time singing, I knew that this was something that as a mother, I was going to have to be diligent about guiding. And it was bigger than me. And I'll never forget her first Christmas. I was a single mom working and wanted to make sure her Christmas was special. Her first Christmas, I spent $18.36 at the dollar store buying her toys. I'll never forget her ripping into those toys as if it was the best Christmas ever. And I felt so much guilt and disappointment because I wasn't able to go out and spend like some of my friends who were working jobs already. And just seeing how excited she was with what I had to offer, knowing, and I felt like she must know that in my heart, this is everything I have. And she's always been that kind of kid.
We're all crying.
This question doesn't, this might be a technical issue on our part.
Yeah, there's no stars because I can't even formulate a sentence.
Well, I will say that I knew my mom was a single mom. I always had nannies growing up, though. My mom might have been helping people get their green cards. I'm not even joking. Like, my first nanny, her name was Lorena. Her name was Reina, actually, which means queen in Spanish. And she taught me Spanish and I taught her English. And I remember, like, each Christmas, like, I was, like, such a weird kid. I would always ask my mom to play My Hands by Jewel. My hands are small, I know, but they're not yours. And like, it, which is like such a morose song to want to open presents to. But,
that was the soundtrack to Christmas. Amazing.
But yeah, it wasn't like All I Want for Christmas is You or whatever. I just, but it was like, I always wanted to be grateful, like, you know, like, and know that that time is a grateful time and know that not everyone has what I have. And it's crazy that my mom said it was $18.36 because I would have thought it was like hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars, right. Because like I was just happy to, like, I don't know, like my mom always, she has this way of never, and sometimes it pisses me off. She has this way of never showing what she's actually going through. Mm. And now that I'm an adult, she's more open with me.
Right.
But when I was a kid, it was like, I never felt unstable. I never felt like the bills weren't going to be paid. I never felt like the Christmas was $18 because my mom just was so fortified.
Also, just you speaking to like her fortification, like it sounds like she really, because I've heard this a lot too. It's like, yes, you want to be open and vulnerable, but you also don't want to lay your problems on your children when they're at an age that they can't really like take on the weight of those problems. You know, it sounds like she wanted you to make sure you had the space to be a kid, you know, to like play and to learn and to try things out and not be burdened by, you know, the stuff that she was going through. That's incredible. I mean, just reminds me to do that for my own kid, honestly.
She wanted you to like feel abundance anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like, this kid is going to care about getting a lot of things to open. So I'm going to go get a lot of $1 things to open. You know, like it was so meaningful that she remembers the number.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's wild.
That's huge.
I never would have known. And I think
that should have been the question, by the way. How much money did she spend on her first Christmas?
But I also think that that abundance is something that I've carried throughout my life. I am constantly confronted with this still to this day. Like right now, as I'm like producing something I can't talk about just yet, but as a dark-skinned Black woman, you know, people make a lot of assumptions about my capabilities and about my wants and my expectations, and they expect me to expect less or to take less. And my mother never raised me to take less. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I had to get to a point in my career where I no longer ask questions when it's something that I need. I make statements. So, and I make collaborative statements because I don't want people to feel offended or upset. So it's like, if I'm in a makeup chair, which I've been in many times, and like there's movies out there, honey, go on Netflix, you can see me playing a bride with no makeup on my face. That's the favorite thing of a makeup artist who don't know how to do Black people is like, you have such gorgeous skin. We don't have to do anything to it. I am a bride. You sit me over here with some setting powder and great lashes. I'll kill you. But like, I had to learn, instead of being like, can you do this or can you do that? I would be like, let's fix this eyeliner a little bit. Let's warm my face up a little bit. Let's do this. Let's do that. It's a collaborative statement, but it's also not a question. It's like, you're going to do it. Let's do it together.
Yeah.
And I had to learn how to navigate in this body, but also accepting and knowing that I deserve the best. But I got that confidence from my mother and also from my grandmother, because when I was a kid, my grandmother convinced me that only Black people were good at things. Like, I grew up a Black supremacist. She was like, only Black people can sing, only Black people can dance, only Black people can and do math and science. Like, and I remember the first time that was broken for me was when I heard Christina
when you
Aguilera.
Met me.
Yeah. Oh. Milana, also you, honey, but you taught me some things too. You and your mama and y'all's little hotel scams and stuff, like, you all hustling. And that's why I love a hustler spirit. But I remember I heard Christina Aguilera sing Genie in a Bottle, and I was like, Grandma, I think I was like 8. I was like, Grandma, she not Black. Why can't she sing?
Well, because she loved the Black people.
And I realized she wasn't doing that to be some kind of, like, I don't believe that you can be racist if you are not in a position of power. You can be prejudiced, but you can't be racist. Mm-hmm. But I realized that she wasn't doing that or saying those things to me because she was anti-white people or anti-anybody else. It was that I couldn't see myself in billboards or in magazines. Mm-hmm. I couldn't see myself anywhere. So she instilled in me that we were special. And I took that with me my entire life. So my mom, you know, giving me lots of tiny gifts, and I don't care the price. It just made me feel like I was special and I was worth a lot of things.
Yeah. Man, you just dropping little nuggets of wisdom and then just like blowing by them like they're no big thing. Like that was amazing.
No, it's really true. We are always, actually, Sandeep, you've said this to me before, and I really believe it, that, you know, words are spells. Mm-hmm. That everything you say, you are casting a little spell in like a woo-woo affirmation way, but especially with children. When, you know, I remember my mom telling me at a young age that I'm really good under pressure. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, you know, doing gymnastics and like, you know, doing auditions. And there were times where I had all this homework and I couldn't do it because I had, and she was just like, you're good under pressure. Yeah. Actually, if you have a test the day after you have gymnastics, you always do better because you're focused and you're disciplined. And that stayed with me that now when things are hard, I know that I shine. And whether that was true then or not,
it didn't matter. Like,
it became something that I believed about myself enough that it mattered.
It was an incantation. Like, my brother would always say, you're a leader. And I think it was because I was like, short, and I was going to be the shortest kid in class and the scrawniest kid and the only brown kid in New Hampshire and all these things. And so he just kept telling me over and over again, you are a leader. That really stuck with me.
Let's move on to our next question. We asked your mom, what makes a great parent?
Oh, I think what she would say is getting to know your children and giving them what they need specifically and encouraging their gifts, but also being aware of their weak points. And trying to build up their confidence and their agency as human beings, and also ensuring that they can be independent without you. I don't know what she said.
Let's hear what she said.
Let's see.
Patience, for sure. You've got to know that they're not children. They're just small adults. And the sooner you communicate to them like adults, the better the relationship will be. I never babied my girls. I tried to make sure things were age appropriate, but I tried to always tell the truth and be direct with them. You have to have love beyond any kind of love you've ever understood, because Lord knows these children will say things to you that just, it can be heartbreaking from time to be so misunderstood as a parent. And every mom out there that's had a teenage child, especially a daughter, will get that. But forgiveness. And so you forgive them because you know that in order for them to be adults and to be self-actualized and independent, they have to break up with you. And being prepared for that breakup.
That scares the crap out of me, the breakup idea.
It's part of also what makes us have to be super present with our kids. Like, knowing that this moment is temporary. Even, and Cindy, you and I think have talked about this, but when you like look back at your kids even 6 months ago or a year ago, and you're like, oh, then they didn't know this word that now they say all the time.
Right.
Or then they didn't have this need that now they're evolving constantly. Mm-hmm. it makes you be like, this moment is precious because it only yep. exists right now. And it's almost going like you have to grieve yes. it very quickly after it happens, in the way that, like, and this sounds way more morbid than it is, but like, the 6 month old doesn't exist. He's gone. She's mm-hmm. gone. They're gone. Now I have this fill in the blank year old. Mm-hmm. So knowing that, like, there's going to be a moment where you're going to break up with your kid because for their own yeah. good almost makes you soak in all the yummy moments that you have right now. And even the painful moments.
If you can be aware of them, like, yes. If you can take the moment to be aware. I think that's the challenge, right? Like, man, I love how she talks about patience right at the top, and like just the whole idea, right, that they're in a developmental phase, that they're developing into these adults and treating them that way, and like, you are the adult, so you have to have the, you know, the wisdom mindset and figure out that all the ways in which kids piss you off or upset you or frustrate you are all triggers of your own that you got to like contend with. Like that's like that's the wrestling you got to do with the self. It sounds that's the wisdom that I'm getting from your mom, Lacey. I don't know if that resonates with you, but
it does. But it immediately took me back to the exact time that, because obviously you guys had the interview with my mom probably like a month ago or a little while ago. I actually have been tethered to my mother, well, like past 30. I'm 32. And I broke up with my mom in that way fairly recently. And it was a very tough time for us because there got to a point in LA recently where like the workload has really been taking me down. And mentally, I just wasn't in a great place. And she wanted to fly here and like take care of me. And like, you know, and I was like, I can't, I have to, this is the thing that I have to do on my own. I have to become an adult. And it was a very difficult time for us because at one point I did say, I was like, I am your child, but I am not a child. Mm. And that was a tough time for us because my mom's used to just getting what she wants. And like, if she says jump, I'm like, what bar am I clearing? You know? And so her saying that, like, I know that it does have this like broader meaning, but the timing of it, I know, is actually because we kind of like I'm an adult now, like until maybe 6 months ago, there were still bank accounts that she set up for me when I was 16 that were connected. Like, where there's like one account where she could see how much money is in it. Like, not that she would do anything with it or anything like that. It was just like, I realized I was still so tethered to my parents, and it was time for me to be a real adult, which was scary and really hard for me. So her saying that, now I'm like, oh my god, I have to call her after this.
Actually, we asked her.
Yeah, we asked her, when did you feel Lacey's breakup with you? I feel like you've kind of answered, but if I don't know if you want to adjust
it.
Or hear it. Okay.
I think I felt it twice. I think I felt it in her, like, her second year of college, when not every decision needed mom to be involved. And I think I felt it about 3 years ago. Yeah. Yeah. When she really was asserting her independence in some ways that just told me, this is her saying, this is who I am, and this is the new role we're going to have as mother and daughter.
So big old buzzer sound on that one. It does sound also like, I think as the parent, I would imagine you have to be prepared to let your kid go multiple times. Yeah. Even you just moving out mm-hmm. of the house, moving out of the state. Those are all her like tiny wedges away. And it also makes sense that as the kid, you're like, you're still tethered.
Yeah. Like, and when she's talking about in college, it was that I came home for the summer and I think I was home for maybe 2 weeks. And, you know, my mom likes to get up early. Like, if I hear Whitney Houston or Anita Baker, we cleaning. Like, you know, she wanted me at breakfast in the morning. And I know it was all love, like, but I was tired. I wanted to sleep. Like, at the time, I didn't know I was dealing with fibroids that last year I ended up having a C-section for. So I was just tired all the time. And I couldn't take living at home after being able to create my own rules. Because my freshman year of college, like, if I was out, like, with my friends and we were at a party and my mom called and was like, where are you? And I was like, oh, I'm out. She was like, you need to go home. And I would go home. I went to college in Pittsburgh. She was in Texas. And she'd be like, you need, like, my best friends from college have a joke about me because, like, we had gone to this after party at this frat house. And my mom had called me and was like, you need to go home. Like, you don't need to be out there. When the party get good, go home. I don't want nothing bad happening to you. And I was like, okay, we have to go home. So I called the college shuttle and I was like, y'all, it's time to go home. We have to leave. We have to go home. My mom said we have to leave. And some of my friends stayed because they're like, girl, what you talking about? But after that, they were calling me the church lady because they're like, you called the church bus and was like, everyone on the bus right now. There's sinning happening here. We have to go. And so when I went back home my sophomore year for the summer, I was like, I can't live here. Like, I went back to Pittsburgh. I got a job and I just lived there and I never moved back after that. I've never lived at home after like the age of 18 pretty much because I graduated when I was 17. So like past the age of 18, I never lived at home again. Like, it's like as I get older, I learn like the cyclical nature of everything and like the things my parents were trying to tell me. So
yeah,
breaking up with them is it was hard, but I feel like our relationship is even better now.
Well, we asked your mom if she's ever talked to you about this. So let's see what she said.
No, we've not. We've not talked about it like this. And I hope that when she's listening to this, it helps her to maybe understand me better. And I hope it opens up more of a dialogue because I see parts of our relationship and that mirror parts of relationships with my mom. And I had so much reverence for my mom that there were just questions that I never really asked her. And I realize now, knowing who she is as an adult woman, I probably could have shared a bit more of that with her.
Yeah. And I have started to ask the questions. My mom lived a wild ass life. Mm. And every now and then she'll tell me something. I'm like, what? So we're getting there. And this podcast, honestly, like, thank you, Milana. Thank you, Sandy. Like, this is very healing. Like, I'm going to call my mother and have the best conversation. Like, wow.
Good. That's the dream.
But now I want to hear about your mom's wild times. I'm like, oh, we should do a reverse version of this podcast.
Call her back.
Your daughter's your podcast.
Hey, we have some follow-up questions. Okay. We asked your mom, how do you define success? How do you think she defines success?
I think my mom would define success as community, family, being comfortable financially, and just being surrounded by people who love you that you love back.
Those are all great answers. Let's see what she says.
For me, it means doing what you were designed to do. We all have a vibration, and I think it is at its highest when you're doing what you were designed to do. And you can see it. It's those people who instantly captivate you because they're doing what they were put here to do. They're truly living in their purpose. And that doesn't have anything to do with money or fame. It's just when you're doing something that gives you as much joy as breathing almost.
And that's what you're doing, Lacey.
I mean, 100%. I'm curious what was going through your head when you were kind of like, wait, she said it doesn't have anything to do with money or fame.
I've been feeling very lacking lately. I know that I have achieve the things that people pray for, that some people will see, some people won't. Every good thing is happening to me, and I am absolutely terrified. I haven't had any room or space for joy because I'm just so scared. I was actually telling my therapist this. I used to think that this is what I wanted, and now I'm not exactly so sure because each time I reach a summit, for some reason, there's something in me that looks up and is like, there's another peak. And I just start climbing again. And I'm not reveling in anything that I've done. I almost have trained myself that if you stop and like enjoy it, then it'll pass you by. And I feel like that probably comes from seeing people get success or have something happen in their career that's really great and they really enjoy it and they're not preparing for the next move, and then it's over. And so it's like, if I want to keep going, I have to keep. And I feel like this is late stage capitalism. I feel like this is the squeeze that's happening to all of us, where it's like, oh, you can make that, make more. Yep. Oh, you can work that hard, work harder. Like in the past 3 weeks, I've been stepped on by a horse. because I had to ride this horse Trixie that
not a metaphor. Got it. Yep.
Yeah, this is real. Literally stepped on by a horse. Like I'm relearning rollerblading. I'm driving sports cars I've never been in that no one teaches me how to drive. I'm just having to figure it out. Like I've been almost hit by cars. Yeah, by work. But this is just
her Uber delivery job.
I was going to say.
Right now, my radical focus has been on be where you are and just be there. Mm-hmm. And I'm teaching everyone that I work with, hey, you cannot inundate me with emails and texts and messages and all this stuff. Like I have 50 other people doing the exact same thing you're doing. This is how I work best. Make a list of what you need from me. Give me a call. I literally was on a phone call yesterday. Like they need my measurements. I pull out my tape. I'm measuring my bust, my legs, my inseams, everything. But like, that's how I can work best. Mm-hmm. Don't inundate me because like my brain just doesn't even have the room.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're sorry for all of our texts.
We
just really needed to know your measurements for this podcast. We asked your mom, what is something you've never asked Lacey but have always wanted to?
I don't know. I have no idea. Damn, I can't even give you a guess, bro. Like, I don't know. Am I really gay?
Okay, great.
All right, locking that in is the answer. Let's play the tape.
What do you need from me? Because I really feel like she has been open in a way recently that makes me rethink maybe what I thought she needed. So I would love to know more about just what she needs now as Lacey, the adult who is on the precipice of all this incredible success.
Yeah, I just think about that when you talk about feeling like you're on an island and you actually have so much support. And is there a way for you to be voicing, you know, just there's so many like landlines coming from the island that you think you're on that are happy to show up for you. Yeah. There are so many people that are like, tell us what you need.
Yeah, it's not that I don't feel supported or like I have community. It's just that the community is through the cellular device, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not like I can just show up. Like, the reason I haven't moved from this overexpensive, like, corporate building that I live in is because my neighbors are like, I'll be out on my balcony and my neighbor John will yell up like, what y'all talking about up there? Or I'll go down there and we'll hang out. Like, it's like,
it's huge.
it's like being in person. When I was in Brooklyn and shooting in Brooklyn was the hardest because it's all on location. It is insane. I've met the most insane people. We've had to move locations, do things, like, it's crazy. I called my mother and my father. They were in bed together. And I told them I wanted to quit. I was like, I don't think I'm built for this. I thought that I had practiced and that I could do this. I was like, I'm so tired of telling people the same thing 17 times. I'm so tired of, like, fighting all day, every day. I'm tired of having my head on a swivel because y'all gonna let me get hit by a bus. Like, I learned early. I got thrown into the Pacific Ocean with no life jacket on a shoot once. And I was like, these people will let you die. Like, you're not safe because there's cameras and there's a set. Like, people will let you die, and people have died. Like, at one point, they were setting up a camera for an OTF on a train track. And I was like, Sarah Jones, why would you ever set up a camera? We put her on our slates. Why would you ever set up a camera on a train track? Like, so it's just like being so hyper vigilant. I was like, y'all, it's taking me down. And so I called them and they just built me up. And that's all I've ever needed from my mom is to just do the thing to be like, you're okay. Everything is fine. You can do this. And she does that. And so she's already given me way more than I could ever imagine a parent could give someone. Okay, lightning round. I will not lightning go round. On any more fast, random tangents. No more tangents.
Fast answers. Well, and then you just get to build up some points here. This is what this is all about, is winning. Is winning the podcast.
I love to win.
As we're talking about the hierarchy and capitalism, and it's not about that. Okay, so make sure to just be present with every question, and that's how you really win. Lacey, what's the best trait that you got from your mom?
Best trait I got from my mom is resourcefulness. I can figure anything out.
What'd she say?
Her sense of humor.
She wanna be funny so bad.
All right, what's the worst trait?
Anger.
Probably impatience.
But they go hand in hand.
Impatience. Okay. I am very impatient. I think that's where the anger is coming from.
I'm going to give you one of the two gold stars.
That's what I meant by anger. She's not like ragey. It's like, we'd be like, give me what I want now. Yeah.
Okay. Yes, that makes sense.
I'm going to give you two gold stars. Okay, great.
What's your favorite show?
My favorite show? Law & Order SVU.
She loves SpongeBob.
Okay. I do love SpongeBob.
All right. Who is the first person she'll thank in her Oscar speech? Who's the first person you'll thank in your Oscar speech?
Her.
Me.
No doubt.
What is your primary love language?
Quality time.
I think acts of kindness.
You know what? It might be, though. Now hearing like how busy you are, you're like, just do things for me.
Your love language?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Acts of kindness.
Okay, we'll give you the points.
Yeah, okay. I'll just, honor system. What is your pet peeve?
Waiting.
Gaslighting.
Maybe beyond a pet peeve, but all right, next.
That's a very justified pet peeve. Yeah,
that was a dig. I know what she means.
Okay.
This podcast actually tears you apart. What's the best present that you got for your mom?
Casper mattress.
It was this little ashtray she made for me when she was in grade school. It's this little blue ashtray. I didn't smoke. I don't know why she made me an ashtray. It's just, it's one of these things I kept forever.
That was for my grandma. She did not keep it.
Oh,
my mom literally, I would make finger paintings. You know all that little you make in school with the popsicle sticks and stuff? My mom would be like, oh my God, this is so beautiful. And then she would pop the trash can lid and throw it away.
I mean, I don't blame her. My son is making art now, and I'm like, you don't care.
It's junk. I'm not. I can't do it. But then she did throw it away in front of me, though.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's a little too harsh. Yeah.
All right. What was your favorite food growing up?
Oh, macaroni and cheese.
Oh, mac and cheese. Yeah.
Bam.
What are three adjectives that your mom would use to describe you?
Smart, talented, hardworking.
Smart, funny, generous.
Okay, we'll take one.
We'll give you one.
Yep. What's your biggest fear?
Death.
Failure.
One and the same for me.
Wait, what did she say?
Failure.
Failure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Ooh, yeah. That's it.
I mean, they're both pretty scary.
She's right. She's right.
And what was your pet name growing up?
I think it was just Lace.
Okay.
Boo Bear.
That's Sydney. That's my sister's name. We still call her Boo Bear. Boo Bear.
Maybe it transferred. I don't
know. She's confusing us. I was never Boo Bear. Sydney's always been Boo Bear. She's still Boo Bear. We still call her Boo Bear, and she's 20.
At the end of the interview, she did say, wait, is this about Lacey or Sydney?
Yeah, at the end of the interview, she was very confused why we called her at all. has been a joy. I mean, any big takeaways? What are you feeling after this window into your mom?
I feel really energized. This was a nice trip home and also through my life. And also thank you so much, both of you, Sun and Milana, for giving me some gratitude. I feel like I can tackle the rest of the day with new eyes and hopefully the rest of the shoot. So
yes, let's go. All right. You tallied 11 gold stars, which is amazing. And it is entirely meaningless. I think more importantly, your open heart and your vulnerability was incredible. So thank you.
I also feel particularly grateful for having a person on the show that doesn't have kids, because in a way you're like more tapped into what it is to be a kid. Like when you have a kid, you're immediately, when somebody tells you a story about a mom and a kid or a dad and a kid, once you have a child, you immediately relate to the parent. And there's something like, I feel like I've learned so much about how I want my child to feel more so than how I want to parent.
Yeah.
Through this conversation with you, because you are so your mother's daughter.
Yeah, I'm very much my mother's daughter. But also, I don't have kids, but like through work and through working with younger talent that I've kind of like, my makeup artist.
And younger sister, right?
I have a lot younger. And I was parentified. So my younger sister was my child. I had to break that relationship this year as well, because she was my baby. Like, I changed her diapers. We had nurses or you know, like nannies, but like I changed her diapers. I took her for walks. Like when she was colicky, like I was there. I did her hair. Like that was my baby.
Yes, you are very maternal. You do take care of the people around you.
But I do also kind of feel like I want to have a baby.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay, let's talk about it.
I'm 32. I feel like I gotta do it right now.
That's not true. That you don't have to do it right now. That part is not true. But I'm gonna call you afterwards.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
It's a different podcast.
Thank you.
Your Mom is a podcast is hosted by Milana Weintraub and Sundeep Parikh. It is executive produced by Milana Weintraub, Sundeep Parikh, and Stephen Hine. Editing and sound design is by Sean Marr. Music by Matt Friedman. This podcast comes from Effin' Funny Productions and Story Mill Media. Be sure to follow the podcast on Instagram and TikTok at Your Mom is a Podcast.
Hey, Mom.
Hey.
I'm on the podcast right now with Milana and Sundeep.
Okay.
I want to say, like, this was a really transformational show. Like, I cried a lot, and your answers were really beautiful, and I just want to thank you so much for being such an excellent parent and, like, really, like, the best mom.
Thank you, sweetie.
And if you were ever wondering what I need from you, you have given me everything that I need, and every time that we talk and you give me advice and you help me through difficult times, like, you really have like been wonderful. And I can't believe how many of our answers were similar because they had me guess sometimes before. And there was one that was like when you really like saw that like Lacey like, you know, like was a talent. And I guess that it was that play by Spirit when you came with Alexis. Yes, and it was.
Yeah, it was that play. That's when we knew. We looked at each other and without words, we knew. Yeah.
Yeah, man, mom, this actually, I needed this right now because, you know, we're about to go to Miami and I'm about to be back in the deep in the work. And I know I called you in Brooklyn ready to quit. Thank you for you and daddy, like bringing me back up. I feel a lot of gratitude right now and a lot of joy. And I miss you and I love you. And I'm going to get home as soon as possible.
Good. I love you too, sweetie. And that's our job. We have to hold you up. You're out there doing great things. Laughter saves lives. We don't know how many times people have listened to your show and seen you do a performance, and it transforms lives. I am a very firm believer in the power of laughter, and I've seen you do it live. I've seen you do it on your shows, and you've earned these moments. So your grandmother would be so proud of you. Oh my gosh, she would just be beaming with joy if she could see all the amazing things you've done.
Thank you, Mom.
You're welcome, darling. I love you.
I love you so much.
And be good out in the streets because you know somebody gonna tell it.
Okay.
They call me and tell me if they see you and you ain't got enough clothes on or, you know.
Oh, Lord Jesus. Okay. I'll call you back soon. I love you, mommy.
Okay, darling. Love you. Be good.
I will.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye.